Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary Show, where ordinary heroes tell extraordinary stories during unique and never been heard before conversations with your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Hillary's unique listening and way of asking questions results in conversations that aren't usually talked about, so you can create the life that you really want but are afraid you can't really have. We are demonstrating the greatness in the human spirit and creating a world where we all reclaim our birthright of joy, happiness, purpose, and passion. Now, here's your host, Hillary Arno Burns.
Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary Show. And today I have a very, very, very special guest. But before we go to him, just keep you in suspense a minute longer. I'm just going to do a little advertisement for my book, The Real Talk Book, that I just published. If you haven't gotten it, go to realtalkwithhillary.com. You can take the Real Talk quiz. And if you don't think you're really talking, sign up for a call with me and we will get you out there. We will get you real. This is the book. This is a proof copy, but it's coming out soon. Your Bullshit is Your Blessing, which will be an amazing, amazing book. If you're negative like me, you got to read this thing. And then this is my original book, The Second Piece of French Toast, a memoir. If you want some juicy stuff, definitely read that one. You'll read it. You'll read it pretty quickly. It's got a little teaser at the beginning. All right. So that's all about me. Now we're going to introduce Doug Murphy, who is a friend of a friend. And when I heard Doug's story, let's just say he bounced back from the brink several times. And you will not believe his story, but he is still here. And you know what? If you've ever had trouble, if you've ever had any kind of trouble, listen to this, because Doug has made it back. He's still here. He's amazing, and you got to hear his story. So let me just tell you who he is. He is a public speaker. He is out to make a difference. He's a singer-songwriter, a father, a son, and an entrepreneur, and an inspiration to everyone who knows him. So welcome, Douglas Murphy.
Thank you, Hillary. It's great to be here.
All righty. So we were in the bullpen earlier talking about some of the stuff that we're going to talk about today. And I just am in suspense to hear about how he made it out of all these brinks, how he made it off the brinks of these situations. So let's see. This is what I know about him. He grew up in Dallas, Texas, and he went to college in Middlebury in Vermont. And then go ahead, Doug.
And from there, the story begins. And I know, Hillary, from watching rebroadcasts and being with you, that part of this, the intent here is not just the story, but how you get that, how I got back up. And what less so much for me, it's the details of what I went through, but how did I get back on my feet after each of these things?
Yeah. And the other thing is, you know, we were talking about saying what people don't talk about. And Doug was saying that he's a little uncomfortable talking about this and he doesn't usually talk about it. And that's what this show's about, is getting it out there so you can grow and other people can also be inspired. So thank you for your generosity and your authenticity. So go ahead. Sorry for the interruption. I just wanted to let people know that you don't always talk about this stuff.
Well, I prefer to listen and listen to people and get them. But I'm happy to share it here. And if some of these stories help make a difference with even one listener, that's good enough for me.
Thank you.
So just to start, I would say the book I would write about my life might be called This Close. As in, I've come this close to many things, this close to dying, this close to being a rock star, this close to being a dot-com billionaire. And through that process, I have come to see my stories and my life as a, a channel for inspiration, to be inspiring and to be inspired, and to make a difference with people. And that almost anything can be come back from. I would take that back. Anything can be come back from. Okay, so the start of the story is after college graduation, I started working at CNN. And that was a great job, and I was in Atlanta, but I really wanted to be a guitar player, and I'd always played guitar. So I formed a band, and during the course of 1 year, we went from playing bars to playing really big shows, all original music, to the point where that was our only job, and we didn't have to, like, work. We didn't make a heck of a lot of money doing it, but I was 22 or 23, I didn't need a lot of money. And my mom sent me a box, a 6x6 box of Sun Chips that we survived on bags of Sun Chips all the time. And so we had a manager of that band, and that band's manager also managed these other bands called Dave Matthews Band, Fish, Spin Doctors, and Blues Traveler. And then our band was Tree. And you've heard of all four of those other ones. They got huge. I always believe that band had what it took in terms of songwriting and content. But what blew us up was, you know, the same old stories of addiction and cheating on girlfriends. And, you know, when you have that many creatives in one room, it either explodes in a good way or in a bad way, and that one exploded in a bad way. So then I started getting hired as a guitar player. And this is the first of this close. You know, that band came so close. Now I became a journeyman guitar player. I get hired by bands to go out on national tours or local tours or reach or even one night shows. And doing that, Hillary, the truth is, I didn't actually put the work in when I would get hired. I would learn enough of the song to be able to play along, and then I just feel my way through it. And I would justify that by saying, well, it doesn't need to be perfect, it needs to have soul, it needs to have, they hired you for your vibe, when really they hired me to play the part. And I can generally play the part, but the truth is, I wasn't willing to do the work to learn every single bit of the parts. And that seemed to bite my butt when we were playing this show. There was like 10,000 people. We were opening for the Jupiter Project. It was a big, big arena. And we always did the same set every night. And the singer said, let's mix it up. Let's do this next one acoustic, just me and you, Doc. And it was the title song from the record. And I knew my part, but there was parts when I didn't really play because that's the way it was. So since I didn't have it completely memorized, I got lost and was completely over at left field during, and so he realizes I'm lost. He's looking at me with a death glare. And afterwards, he's like, what happened? And I tried to say something about, oh, and he said, you don't know the song, do you? And I said, sure, I do. I lied. I wasn't straight. And he said, okay, you play it for me then, right now. I couldn't play it for him right then. And boom, I was off the tour. And what I got from that is, if you don't do the work, you can't expect to enjoy the result. And I remember there's that John Coltrane quote, and they said, how is it that you are so amazing? And he says, it's easy. First, I learn and master the song. Then I forget all that and wail. Well, I skipped the learning and mastering. I did some learning, never a mastering. And then I would wail, but sometimes that wailing didn't work. So that was a really good learning experience. And I had another offer on the table to join another tour. And this was going to be a year-long national tour. And I would be the rhythm guitar player. And at the same time, my friend had this idea to start a computer camp, like for kids, for, you know, 12 to 17, 9 to 17, how about college campuses? Like this idea of put kids in college campus in an academic enrichment environment. And we literally said, we've never done anything like this before, and we have no experience whatsoever, but it sounds great. And we both love coding, and we're nerds. So we started that camp. So at that moment, in that fateful choice, I chose to start a company and abandon that tour. And that
And what
company,
happened to those bands? First band of
they go on, the first band, Tree, we imploded due to all of that stuff, and it's fragmented into five different bands. And
okay,
those
so you didn't
followers,
miss anything there. Okay.
well,
And
we
then the
missed
second.
next was, I'll tell you where we missed it, is we had a Saturday night closing in this place called the Cotton Club. So we were the headliner band. It was sold out. We knew there was A&R guys in the crowd. And we did a great show, and then they wanted an encore. And I could see the A&R guy who was watching very closely what we were going to do.
The
And
Who guy? Which guy?
A&R, like the album and the scouts for the labels, you know,
Oh,
when
okay.
that's what they call the A&R. It's like artists and representation. And they're the scouts who say we're going to hire or not hire you, or you know, sign or not sign you as a
Right.
band. And that was it. Around that time, the Black Crowes had come out with their first album, and their first single was a cover. We had a cover of a similar style of song that really rocked and was upbeat. The song, and I personally chose the last song because we didn't have it on our set list, what would be an encore. I picked an original, and it was slower, and it was more of a ballad, and it's a great song. It wasn't the right choice for an encore. And I could see the A&R guy's face sort of fall. And then we never heard from them again. So that moment, that's the moment where if we had done the cover, that people would have known that it was a deeper cut, the way we did it, which was so killer, and it was upbeat and danceable. And that all of those years of practice down to that one instant where, you know, one choice. Now, is that really the case? Is that a story that I made up? Yes, I made up that story.
And
After that,
that was with Pre, or that was with the
that was
other?
with
Okay.
Tree. And then shortly thereafter, Tree, you know, we made a couple of records, and we just didn't have any money to develop it. And the conflicts got to be so great. That's what led me to go off and get hired.
Can you, yeah, you're crackly, and I want to make sure that people can hear you. Try that.
Sure. Hopefully that's a
That's
little
better.
better.
Yeah, that's better. Okay, good. Right. So
Well,
that was the Pre. And then you never went with the second band, so then you decided to start the computer camp
yes,
with your
there you go.
friend. Okay. All right.
So I had taught at the Princeton Review as an SAT teacher, SAT, GMAT, and GRE. So I had a little experience in the tutoring environment. But we had no business starting this computer camp. And I said, well, if we're going to do it, we should rent space at colleges. And if we're going to rent space at colleges, we should start with the best colleges. So I called Harvard and I said, hi, we have a computer camp and we'd like to rent space. And they said, we don't rent space. Goodbye. So then I called MIT and I said, hey, we have a computer camp and we'd like to rent space. And they said, sure, no problem. And they faxed over a contract. This is back when faxes were used. And then I called Stanford and I said, hey, we're a computer camp and we want to rent space. And the lady literally said, well, who are you guys? And I said, well, we do it at MIT. And she said, oh, great. And she faxed over a contract. So that was the first year. We did 2 weeks and 2 weeks. And we timed the dates to coincide the Grateful Dead summer tour. So the Grateful Dead summer tour would match up to our dates so we could get to go to shows and use this as a way to pay for it. That first year, we had 25 kids a week, total of 100 kids. That was like enough to break even. That meant me and my partner were driving the computers and stuff. We were leading all the classes. You know, we had a few staff,
So
really
was one
shoestring.
of you at MIT and one was at Stanford?
We did from in succession. So we did 2 weeks in Stanford, then we drove all the way to MIT with the computer. And then we drove all the way back to Atlanta and dropped them off where we were based. So it was a crazy start. But we didn't lose any money. So we went the next year and we went to 300. And then we went to 1,000, then 3,000, 6,000, 12,000, 18,000. Suddenly we reached 18,000 kids, 85 locations, three countries, all the best brand names like Vanderbilt or, of course, your MITs, SMU, Rice University, like all the key.
What were you teaching them?
It was called Computer Camp. It was coding, game design, mostly programming, web stuff, HTML, C++, like
How
coding
did you
and
know
code.
that? Who knew that? Did you know that?
I actually learned the night before the next day's course. I would write the next day's curriculum that night, and then we would do it. And once I had 1 week done, then we could repeat that week and I'd have to add more modules. But then later, we had to do it right and hire real curriculum designers and, do it by the book. In the first days, we had no business. As a parent now, I would say we had no business running that. We didn't have a medical professional. A lot of things that we take for granted now, when I say we, I mean the team here. We didn't know to do. It wasn't even that we avoided doing. We literally didn't even know to do that. But as we got bigger, we started doing things right, and our intention was always to reach those kind of nerdy, computer-oriented kids who aren't very outgoing, don't socialize, have very few friends. This gave them a chance to come together in a community of like-minded kids. They're the only kid in their grade who does programming. Well, now everybody there does programming, so they could finally make friends. And that was really the secret to our success. And that's what we've been, at all the camps that I continue to run, which I'll get to. But this now leads us to the moment number two of being this close. So as we grew, those 18,000 kids, they paid tuition. Now, until at that point, the dot-com revolution was starting, dot-com 1.0. Remember the late 90s, early 2000s, when everybody was a dot-com and Webvan was valued more than American Airlines, Explorer valued more than all the
Hey,
airlines.
wait. I can't. It's hard to make out what you're saying, so I want to make sure that people can hear you. I don't know what it is with these things, but if you can
How's that?
keep
Is
them
that any
up,
better?
that's
Yeah.
better. When you move, it like I'm looking at your mouth so I can see, but if someone's just listening, they won't know what you're saying. So sorry. Just want to make
Okay.
sure it's a good experience for people. Okay. Because what you're
Okay.
saying is great. Yeah.
I will slow down and keep these here different.
Yeah.
Okay. How's that?
It's okay. What if you take them out?
If I take them out, I can take them out, but I'll be fine.
Let's just try it. Because I hate
All
for
right.
people not to hear this. Yeah.
Okay.
Knock, knock. Who's there? No, I'm just kidding. Okay.
Okay. Here we go. Let's see if this is better.
No, you
No.
have to adjust the setting. Okay.
How about now?
When you're close, yeah, if you stay in close, we can hear you.
Okay,
Okay.
now I'm using the computer speaker so my coworker
That's
can hear
better.
me. All right,
Yeah.
good.
Stay close. Good. Okay. Sorry for the interruption, folks. Good.
No worries. It's the modern world of technical difficulties. All
I just
right.
want to make sure people can hear this amazing story. All right. So you're doing
Okay.
this camp. You got
So, yeah, we're doing
three
this camp.
kids.
We've got 18,000 kids coming. We're making good profits. We have a wonderful company. And at that moment, all those other companies were turning into dot-coms. And I had a friend who started drugstore, drugs.com. And I have a friend who started Salesforce.com. I knew these guys. They went public. And so we said, we're going to go for the brass ring, just like these other guys. And we turned it from computer camp to computercamp.com. And we said, your tuition includes 1 week of camp and 51 weeks of our online universe, which we called ACE Planet. It was American Computer Experience. It was ACE Planet. And we have live courses delivered by Stanford computer science majors. We record all those classes kids can watch. And we have a community where they can sound off. It's like a very early version of what we would now call a social network. And so that's what we, and then we said, since we're a .com, the value of our company now uses .com valuation. So if we are making $10 million, we're worth $150 million now all of a sudden. We just made up. And we hired bankers and we were starting to raise money and we signed our IPO papers and we were in the channel to go public. And in that moment, when I signed those papers, that made me personally worth like $40 or $50 million right there on this. Now, it's not like I could recover that. It wasn't in the bank, right? But it was on paper. And yeah, so when we hired the bankers, they said, for this to go public, we need a CEO that the street is familiar with because nobody's going to want to put their money on some unknown. And we said, we've proven it. We've grown it this far. So let us keep going. They said, no, we're really going to put this person in. It's going to help it go public. Don't you worry. So I went and I got married to my graphic designer. And we did a trip around the world, a literal trip around the world. And when we came back, we got pregnant accidentally. And then I drove myself into a wall at 50 miles an hour with no seatbelt on because I was running to the store. So I shattered my femur and kneecap and face and just was in a lot of terrible, you know, bone.
How did you drive into a wall? You just weren't looking?
I don't remember, Hill.
Oh. You were like,
I was
in a
going
moment.
Straight, and then the next thing I know, I'm in the passenger seat facing the driver door. On my right leg, my foot is still on the gas pedal. But it's off.
Ouch. Okay.
So that is, this is the beginning of a long medical journey and a very short journey for the rest of that company. So during that year, I was in PT, physical therapy, like 3 hours a day. I had several surgeries. You know, the new CEO came in. They delayed the IPO. They delayed it again. And meanwhile, we went from 18,000 to under his stewardship back down to 6,000 in 1 year.
Wait, so why did they delay it? Because of your accident?
No, they delayed it because there started to be rumbles in the market that maybe these dot-com valuations were crazy and it was hard to justify why Priceline could be worth that much money. You know, Priceline was at one time worth more than every airline combined in market cap. And that's just not sensible, right? So they said, let's wait a couple of weeks. And that couple of weeks eventually became the bottom fell out of the market. And they said, you guys can't go out. We can't go out right now. We're going to have to delay this at least a year. It could be 3 years. Meanwhile, we went from 18,000 to 6,000. So we had like a $12 million loss that year, which would have been easy to raise money as a dot-com. But at that point, it was very difficult to raise money. So that company, so when I got married, I was worth $40 million, whatever. And, you know, king of the castle. A year later, the company is bankrupt, out of business. I'm broke. I've got a baby, a brand new wife, and I'm still on crutches from the car accident. So that was one crazy first year of marriage. Crazy is a story. It was a difficult first year of marriage.
So if you had, let's say you were down to 6,000 students, did you lose all of them? Like, why did you go bankrupt just because you couldn't go public? Did you have all those costs or?
Yes, they had done a lot of extended marketing efforts and spent a lot of extra money. You know, we raised millions of dollars from investors. We spent that money to build out the back end of the online component with all the servers and how do we record the classes. And also they did a television marketing campaign and an outbound phone campaign, which didn't resulted in none sign up. So we're that plus spending against a higher budget when we only had 6,000 kids. So there was a $12 million loss. And a lot of that was to the schools. So we owe Stanford a whole ton of money. Stanford's not going to let us back on campus unless we pay. But we couldn't pay. So I did my darndest to try to
push those best schools off to the future and say, you know, we've been here for years, you know, it didn't work. They need to get paid for this year before they're going to book you for next year. And the only way to do that was raise the money, and we could not do it. We just couldn't do it in that environment. So that company was gone. And that is number two, this close. Because if we had gone out in that first time, maybe it would have stayed public. Now, maybe we would have had bad numbers and those, it still would have.
But you are in debt now. Okay. All right. So we're about to go on the halftime break. Why don't we play your song? Or is it too early to play the song?
Oh, sure. We can play it right now.
That'd Let's play the song. We'll have the commercials, and then we'll come back to hear the rest of the story.
Do you want any intro of this song?
Sure.
Okay. So, folks, for me, playing music is how I release my emotions, and it's always been a very emotional experience. And I talked earlier about how I wouldn't always learn the song, but I always felt the music. And this particular song happened after a tragedy in our family. And I didn't know what to do. So I sat on the couch like 2 a.m. I just started playing guitar and making up lyrics. And my sister came out and we just kind of said things and it became this song. So the tragedy was, I guess I should just go ahead and share because I said I would be vulnerable today. The tragedy was that my dad committed suicide. But this is not a song that you would know that, I don't think, from listening to it. But that was the source of the emotion. And this song was the cleaner out, the cleanser, the plunger that helped plunge a lot of that emotion out.
And which band, is it a band or is it just you?
So this is our current band is called Lunar Tourists with an S on the end. And we're on Spotify and everywhere.
So it's a current band. It's not the old band. Tree. Okay. Yeah. All right. Cool.
Thank you for making that clear. Tree, those tree songs, you know, those, that's gone. But this is my current band. That's a lot of fun. So here we go.
So we're having a little preview. Questions. Yes. All right. Thank you.
We don't ask any questions anymore. We've come to expect it from people like you. Sometimes at the end of the night, we don't even ask. Do that. Oh,
Has social-emotional learning become just one more thing on your teachers' plates? Do teachers and students both find it boring and ineffective? Then bring Kikori to your school. Kikori transforms classrooms through experiential SEL activities that help students play, reflect, connect, and grow. Even better, students say it's more fun than recess. Schedule a no-obligation conversation at kikoriapp.com/bringkikori. KIKORI.
All right, and thank you to our sponsor, KikoriApp.com. If you want to bring social emotional learning to your children, business, any kind of team building activity, go to KikoriApp.com and ask for Haley. That's my daughter. That's her company. It's an amazing company. And then for my stuff, if you haven't read the Real Talk book, go to RealTalkWithHillary.com. Order the book, take the Real Talk quiz. And if you feel stuck in some areas where you're not speaking up, schedule a call with me and we will get your blank moving. We will get your tongue moving and you will start to be free. And it's a really cool life. All right, we are back with Douglas Murphy. Hopefully our sound challenges are over. Thank you to Doug's mom for piping in with the feedback. We appreciate that. Hope you enjoyed the song. And sorry about your dad. That was back in 2017. And so, you know, thank you for the song, Doug. Douglas. So there you are. Let's see. You're married. You have, I guess you at that point you had a new baby. You're still on crutches. You're going bankrupt, and now what? How does someone recover from that? Obviously, you have. Here you are. So if anybody's having troubles, you can get through it as well. What'd you do next, Doug?
You know, Hill, I fell in love with camp and the transformation that kids undergo during even 1 week is remarkable. Like the opportunity to make a difference with those kids I've seen them come in one way and come out completely unrecognizable, even to their parents. Like they're outspoken, they're empowered. They know their voice. They can ask for what they need. That difference would have been great if I had that when I was a nerd kid. I wanted to make that same difference with all children. And I still do. So I still run camps and I've been running camps ever since. So what I did is I started a new camp company. Well, we moved to New York because my wife got into Pratt. And so we moved to New York and I started a camp company here from nothing. And I couldn't really share my story about how my previous one went bankrupt. So I came up with a new business model, and I started operating and running camps. And those were going, you know, fine. It was getting started when my next
obstacle. Before we go there. All right, before we went to the obstacle. So when you say camp, was this like a summer camp? Was this another computer camp? Did you go live? Were you on Zoom? Like, how did you actually, how did you impact these kids? I just, visualization. Sure. I want to be able to see it in my mind.
Okay. When you look at the life cycle of summer camp, the cash flow cycle, you get all your money in June when everybody pays. And then you get the deposits like starting in January for the next year. So you have a bucket and you hope there's money in the end of the bucket till the next year when the next deposits come in. But to start a program, you got to have some money. And I didn't. I had zero money. So I said, the only way I can do this is I want to partner with a school. And rather than rent space from them, and then we extract profits doing whatever we want to do, however we want to do it. So I think the risk to that school is something bad could happen. A kid could be murdered, raped, and the worst scenario. The headline would say murder at Babson. It would not say murder by a camp that rented space, right? The risk reward didn't make any sense for that entire model. So I went out to colleges and said, you should have your own summer camp and you should utilize your facilities that are lying fallow in the summer, and it will attract high-scoring, academically-oriented kids who can afford it, so they're high-income, high-scoring. And even if they don't come, it increases your branding and helps your branding. And that sounded like a good idea. And I went to all the schools that we rented from, and every single school said, we don't need help in branding, and we're doing just fine with renting space, so see ya. So we ended up partnering with B-team colleges, C-team colleges that no one's ever heard of. They're the ones that need the help. The downside of that is they have no brand and they're often in a no destination location. So if they're in the middle of nowhere and no one's heard of them, they're happy to hire our company. And it's very difficult to bring kids in to register them. But we were doing that fight and we added a bunch of schools. And the truth is, it stopped being fun, Hillary. Camp is supposed to be fun. And I got an email with the subject line said 911 website emergency. Now that, of course, gets your attention. The subject, the content was a junior person in the marketing office of a college. And it was amounting to, there's three typos on the website. And they copied the college president, the provost, the head of admissions. They copied everyone. It was like a looking good. And at that moment, I said, you know what? This isn't fun. We're going to go back to the old model of running our own programs our way. So we started adding our own location, our own camps. We have one called Summer Culinary, and it's a cooking camp. All of our programs are academic enrichment. They're only in the summer. They're ages 12 to 17. They're residential or sleepaway, or they're day or commuter students. And we have three brands that we run. Summer Culinary, which is our cooking camp. Sure. And then we have another one called Vet Summer, which is like veterinary medicine for kids who love animals, the animal camp. And then we have another one where we're partnered with IEEE, and it's called the IEEE Tri-Engineering Summer Institute. It's an engineering program. And these are held all across the country, three different kinds of programs. And that's what we run. And that's what we do. And so, yes, the opportunity to make a difference with those kids remains, and it happens every summer. I mean, a couple of summers ago, there was a moment when a student came to the staff and he said, just so you guys know, I'm actually gay and I'm going to come out to all of the kids here tonight. And when my parents come, I'm coming out everywhere, and I'm starting tonight. And it brought tears to my eyes that we could create an environment where he would feel comfortable enough to actually share that. I mean, wow. You know, that safe space, that it takes a lot to build that community. That's what I'm really out to do. Sure, the classes are important, but those personal breakthroughs for that kid, that's what he's going to remember for the rest of his life about that program, as he got empowered.
Wow. Okay. So when was that you were on the next brink? When?
So the next brink happens when my younger daughter is in kindergarten. It's the end of the year. It's the kindergarten wrap-up picnic, you know, like the end of class.
Yeah. And where were you living then?
This is in Brooklyn at Prospect Park.
Okay.
And
what year was this?
This is going to be, I'm going to say 2006, 2006 or something, roughly.
Okay.
So I cleaned up the trash after the party. Our own trash, not like stuff from under the bushes, not dirty needles, you know, just our stuff. And I spun the trash bag to tie it off, and it brushed my ankle. And there was a little trash juice. And it turns out it contained that very rare bacteria that causes what's called necrotizing fasciitis, the flesh-eating bacteria.
Okay.
So I got that then. That was Saturday night. I can tell this part quickly. By Monday morning, it was a small bruise, and it was getting bigger, but it hurt so much. I went to the ER. I collapsed in the hallway, and I woke up in the ICU some days later. I think I was in the intensive care unit for 10 days, I hit 107.7 fever. They were draining all the blood out of my arms. They had a main line going in my neck with cold plasma to keep my brain cool. I started to have organ failure, sepsis. They told my wife, if you need to have him sign any papers, do it now, because we don't think we can save this guy. They scheduled me for amputation.
What?
And then they said, well, let's go tonight. And the fever broke and I got through it. I made it. I survived. So wow. I finally got discharged. And then get this, Hillary. I get home. It's the first time I've been. I've got all those sticky marks from the sensors. I take a long shower, the first shower in weeks. All that sweat from being 107 degree fever. I get out of the shower. I have the slightest slip. And boom, I break the femoral neck on my right leg where it had the surgeries for the accident. Snapped
the
ball off the top of the femur. Snapped it right off. And I knew right then that that was bad. So I didn't say anything. I got to snuggle with my daughters for that one night. And then the next day, I'm back in the hospital. That time, 10 days, because it took them a week to even figure out how to do the surgery because it was so complex. Then I had a whole ton of further surgeries, a total of 24 surgeries, which is a lot. Bone grafting was part of it, eventually total hip replacement. And during that entire time, oxy thrown at me by the doctors. So I barely survived the flesh-eating bacteria, and I barely survived the pain medicine they gave me after, because I got hooked on that oxy.
Oh, my God.
And then it got to the point when that became the most important thing. How many pills are left in the bottle? Where am I going to get more? How can I sweet talk the doctor? And so when I could no longer tolerate that, I said, enough is enough. And I got clean. And I tapered. And it was brutal.
Wow. Wow.
And so that was another example of this close. I mean, laying there in the ICU, 107.7, I'm having fever visions, hallucinations, and they were nightmares. I had one good one where I was flying a dragon over Japan. And my mom tells me that I called her from my hospital room bed, said, come and bring the suit because we got to go to Brad and Angie's wedding, because I somehow thought I was invited to Brad and Angie's wedding.
Oh my God.
So there's a lot of fun stuff there. Till what I really got out of that whole experience is that every day is priceless, and we don't get a lot of chances. And so I invented something for myself that I even say to this day, and I say every day, and that is, if I could put one thing in with the listener, it would be that today, right now, is a top 10 day in your whole life. One of your top 10 days is right now. For me, it would be the days my kids got married, my kids were born, the day I got married, the day I got divorced. No, I'm joking. That's not one. Right? So those are going to be up at the top. But today can slide in at number 6. You know, I'm on a radio show. It's great. I woke up. I'm alive. It's a top 10 day. And that has been really important for me in seeing, you know, a path. Because when there were those dark days, I couldn't see a path. And I wanted to give up. But I couldn't give up. I wouldn't give up. And so I said, okay, well, then today's a top 10 day. Standing in this a top 10 day is a lot different than, you know, the darkness and cynicism and resignation that existed before.
And what do you think brought you out of the dark and into the light?
Love. Love of my daughters, my sisters, my nieces and nephews, my mom, the world, nature, just love. And I wasn't willing to. leave them incomplete. I didn't want that to be the story.
Wow.
That was unexpected. And I didn't think I was going to talk about that. But that was the part that really had me look at what's important in my life. You know, the most important thing is counting pills in a pill bottle. That certainly is no life, especially when you've got two beautiful daughters who need you. So it may have cost, it cost me a lot. It cost me my marriage. But what I get to be now is an advocate for those who also have addictions and a person who makes a difference with all sorts of kids. And we have scholarship programs in all of our programs, so it's not just for the wealthy. If there's one thing I'd like to do, it would be to raise $10 million from, you know, big pharma, big defense, and do scholarship-based tech programs for the kids that don't have a shot, and they certainly have the brain. There's a way to make a difference. I can make a difference with everyone in, I interact with, especially when I'm coming from today's a top 10 day. That has made a huge difference for me.
Where did you get that from, top 10 day?
You know what? It just popped into my head. Like, wow, this is a top 10 day. Kind of just popped in.
Okay.
And then I'm like, I really reflected on that. And I was being with that thought. And I thought, why can't every day be a top 10 day? Not just today. And that was the source. And when I share that with people, it lands. And my ex, and we are very close, and our family is very close. Sometimes she'll call me and say, hey, guess what? I'm having a top 10 day. I mean, that's wonderful. But it was always the getting up. This show isn't about the getting knocked down. This show is about the getting up after. And each time what got me up was love. At the end of the day, love for someone or for something, or even love the opportunity, the chance to keep going. Like, I've been given time. I've been given a chance to, you know, to go through all those things and make it. You know, we make stuff mean things. I make it mean that there's something I'm supposed to do. Or there's a difference that I'm out to make. And so I'm out to do that. Like, getting up was each time, it was taking the focus off of me and putting it out there. Like, it's not, I know there's people with worse stories. My story is worse than a lot of people's that are listening. And there's people, I have a friend who's had over 100 surgeries. He only has like 6 inches of intestine left. So his story is way worse, especially the surgical. And he uses a morphine pump. He's like literally on a pump 24/7. So, you know, I don't think that my story is the worst or the best, but what I can say is when I put my attention out there from love, that was what the difference was.
Wow. Oh, what's this?
So that was unexpected for you, I think, Hillary. I can see.
Yeah, everything shifted when you said love, right? The whole energy shifted, yeah. Wow. Well, thank you, Doug. Almost done. I hope people could hear the beginning. I'm assuming that your camps are doing well, and you're doing well. And how would people find you if they want to know more about your camp, hire you to speak? How would they reach you?
Oh, that's a great question. The camps are called Vet Summer, like VET, vetsummer.com. You'd search it. summerculinary.com, and Try Engineering. You search those three, you'll find it. To connect with me, I would suggest LinkedIn. I'm Douglas P. Murphy. And just message me on LinkedIn to book or to make any connection. And my band is Lunar Tourists. We're on Spotify. And there's also Douglas P. Murphy records that I have too, that are all there on YouTube, etc. So that's how you get in contact with me. If anyone out there is struggling with addiction or is stuck, like Hillary said, then call Hillary and get coaching from her, or reach out to me, and I will support you too. To any person, I'd love making a difference with them.
Wow. Well, thank you, Douglas P. Murphy. Thank you for heartfelt sharing. I know you didn't plan on saying all that, but hopefully, like I say, if we're saying it, someone needs to hear it. So whoever you are, reach out, and we're happy to help you. If you haven't gone to my site, you can go to realtalkwithhillary.com and reach me that way. And just thank you. Anything in closing? I think we're done, but anything else?
The only thing I want to say is I want to acknowledge you, Hillary, for taking a shot and putting me on, and mostly the difference that this show is out there making. We have no idea who it's reaching or what message gets to who. It's clear it's reaching people and messages are being received. So thank you on behalf of the universe for writing the books and having the show and being a coach and doing all those things for the same reason, to make a difference. So thank you.
You're welcome. And thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening to the Getting Real with Hillary show. We hope you are entertained and inspired. Please subscribe to Hillary's newsletter. Go to gettingrealwithhillary.com for more freedom techniques and fantastic stories and links to other great stuff. And don't forget to tune in every week on Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on BBS Radio TV. And let's get real. Let's get connected. Let's get inspired and create that life you love.